It's a little bit before 4 in the morning. I've been staying up late for a couple of weeks now, at least. I guess things always kind of slide this way. I just am predisposed to staying up late. It's just easier when you're a weird insomniac with sleep fucking problems. It's easier to stay up later than it is to get up early, you know? If every day you gotta push yourself a little further, you know, like you gotta wait till you're exhausted before you fall asleep. So every day you're going to bed a little bit later, a little bit later, a little bit later. So next thing you know, it's like 8:30 in the morning and you're going to bed. But then it never quite just progresses as a full cycle. It's always something to pull you back. Largely, I think the only reason this hadn't happened sooner is, my cousin Dan wasn't working, and he would swing by every day at about 11:30 in the morning, wake me up. But now that he works till like 3:30, I've adapted to that. Now it's like sometimes when he rolls in, if he comes over, I'm still sleeping. But I don't really mind it. I don't mind staying up all night. Hear that? Got some... What are those fucking things called? I don't know. It's a very basic insect. Actually, I know where there's a bunch of those. Not grasshoppers, right? Not cicadas. Anyway, I don't really mind staying up all night, but it's been fucked up this week because... Man, this is going to be rambly. Whatever. It's been really hot. Just muggy like fucking crazy. Just so hot like... My parents' house, where I am staying for the summer, is very old and poorly insulated, so it's freezing cold in the winter and too hot in the summer. Although I think, I don't know, at some point this summer, it was freezing in there also, like so cold that I had to go outside to warm up. I don't know, it's just a fucked up weird place. Seriously, why can I not remember what those insects are called? Such a basic word, just gone. Boy, you know, I was just thinking how weird it would be. It's very unlikely, but if I was to meet somebody this late at night, because, I mean, it's fucking pitch black. I can't see shit. It would be frightening. The dark really is scary. I was listening to a podcast that Gabe did, Fam Radio, where one of the songs was from Day of the Dead. And... I was going downstairs when everyone was gone for the weekend. I was the only one in this big house. Going downstairs in the middle of the night to get something to eat. And using this little LED that's on my keychain. This little LED light. And listening to that music while going down this old ass house with the fucking little light on. It's like... It's just fundamentally scary. It's like if... If I saw a zombie or some kind of crazy fucking shambling mass of flesh were to stumble into my view, it would have scared the fucking shit out of me. Like, I would have had a goddamn heart attack. Anyway, it's been so humid this month. Humid. I noticed that, like, I don't know. I never used to pronounce my H's. I think it could be because I got some French in my dad's side of the family. Human. Humid. But then somebody pointed it out to me. Now I sometimes make the effort to make the human. Humid. It's just extra sounds you don't need. I always feel like a bit of a douche because I'm just fucking conforming, I guess, to what people want you to do. Anyway, so hot. Like, man, my bedroom is just fucking retarded. I've been like editing some Keith and the Girl stuff. And I was like, I just had to get the fuck out of there. That's just so hot, like a crazy, just super humid oven. New York was bad for that, man. When it gets hot in the summer in New York, it's crazy how fucking humid it is down there. Just a mess. So, I don't know. I've been staying up a lot at night lately. I'm just going to let my thoughts ramble wherever they might go. But catching up on my Joss Whedon, because Joss Whedon is pretty much... He's the guy who created Buffy the Vampire Slayer. it may sound lowbrow, but he's pretty much my favorite writer who's not dead. Which is not to say that everything he does is great. You know, he's written an awful lot of stuff that didn't really affect me. But when he hits fucking good. I really think he's kind of like what Shakespeare was back in his day. I think Shakespeare is too far removed from modern times to actually be properly understood by anybody anymore. I think Shakespeare fans are basically just fucking posers. But the way that he was back then, you know, the plebs in the front row pay a little bit to, and they have like their body jokes that they laugh at while the fancy pants is up in the fucking the box get all of his clever references. That's what Joss Whedon seems like to me. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, on the face of it, you know, just sounds stupid. He's not worried about pop culture. He's not afraid of pop culture, Joss Whedon. He's not afraid of appealing to the masses and then putting things, messages in there from that point, which is just my favorite way to communicate anyway, is just to talk shit, just to talk pop culture. That's how I relate to people. Find it the easiest and best way. But, you know, just TV shows in general, it's hard to hold a TV show together. I really think Buffy got pretty rough by the end, and same thing with Angel. Angel was the spinoff show, and it got really fantastic for a little while. Season 3 and 4, it was better than Buffy. It finally fucking kind of grew up and took over. But the last season, the fifth one, I just wasn't feeling it. So it's all these years later, and I still never finished it. So I was like, I gotta do this. I gotta finish this thing. So fucking forced my way through the last, like, 6 episodes. Was really finding it quite a slog to do. Until the very last episode. Was really worth it. Was a really good episode. Was some classic Joss shit. You know, just reminded me of why I love that guy so much. As opposed to poor old Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That show got so off the fucking rails. And I kept hoping for Joss to fix it. I was like, okay, 5 episodes to the end. Gonna do it, Joss. You can pull this up. You can pull this out of the fire somehow. 3 more episodes. 2 more episodes. Here we go. The big finale. The final episode. Joss is gonna do this somehow. And I think I expected too much from Joss. Because he did not. Anyway, the Angel ending, though, I liked a lot. And that got me to start watching his new show, Dollhouse. And I had avoided Dollhouse kind of because his show in between, it was called Firefly. It only ran for half a year. Hands down, my favorite TV show. Forever and always, man. It's like how Shawshank Redemption is always going to be my favorite movie, and Atlas Shrugged is always going to be my favorite book. Preacher is always going to be my favorite comic. Firefly is always going to be my favorite TV show. Like, there's just these things that hit me during formative times, and I just really don't think anything is going to top that. I just don't think the circumstances in my life are ever going to line up that I'm going to find a work that will be more meaningful. And Firefly, like, wow, holy shit. It's just, it really, it's like, you know, when you go back and you look at things and they don't hold up, it's not that way with Firefly. Because see, that was the problem with Dollhouse. I heard it starts off pretty shaky, gets pretty respectable. But I just knew I wouldn't be able to give it a fair shake, because in the back of my mind, I'd always just be thinking, like, yeah, you know, maybe it's all right, but sure, no Firefly. And it sure ain't. But after watching a few of those and starting to dip my toes in, I went back and watched this episode of Firefly called The Message. And the premise of Firefly is just, it's the future. These guys live Han Solo style, you know, just on the edges of things. They just run random jobs and, you know, everything's kind of shitty and junky, even though it's the future, because they don't have the fancy stuff. And basically, it's just about finding the corpse of... They get the corpse of one of their friends from back when they were in the war, and they have to take his body back to his home planet to be buried. And I just can't watch that without... I didn't even watch the whole thing. I fucking just hopped to the end. I watched the last few minutes. Just fucking tears streaming down my face. I just... Such a good show. And just... I don't know. It's even worse, I think, just to watch it in bits and pieces like that. Because if you watch the whole thing, you remember how much it was a TV show. It... Fight scenes of no particular importance and jokey shit and dumb subplots and some things that weren't really that important. But when you really get to the just the fucking the meat of it, right to the pure core, it's just shocking how good that show was. Just all the themes that it tackled and all the stuff that it just fucking, I don't know, it's like that theory. It's supposedly, you know, you meet the person that's right for you, you know, the romantic relationship that is going to be the major relationship of your life. And you just feel, you feel your fucking molecules vibrate, you know, in synchronicity with someone else. Sympathetic, just that excitement of recognition, you know, of recognizing in someone else the things that you like about yourself or wish that you had, you know, just the things that you admire. And that TV show is like that for me. It's just, it's ludicrous how well. It's like that little fucking spaceship from that fucking sci-fi show is just like sailing through my fucking soul. Christ, it's fucking 4 a.m. Traffic, leave me alone. I'm trying to be melodramatic here. Gotta get off this fucking street. This street is such a nightmare during the day, like... I mean, I guess as evidenced by the fact that even at 4 a.m, cars keep going by. During the day, this is unfortunately the street I live on, it's got to be the busiest street in this whole fucking city. Maybe second place, but really fucking busy. My friend Chris lives right across the street, and it's like fucking Frogger trying to get to his house. And it's like, man, eventually I'm just gonna... get hit by a car and die because I keep cutting it closer and closer because I'm so fed up with waiting and trying to cross this street. Just walking over a bridge and I heard like a branch fall. But that's way down under the bridge and it's like the middle of the fucking night. No one will be down there, right? It's probably just a random thing. Anyway. I don't really have any specific point to talking about Firefly. I guess the theme in general is just, I don't know, I've been feeling emotional lately. Maybe I wouldn't be able to turn on, you know, that episode called The Message and watch it at any time and just feel the tears roll down. Maybe it's just that it's, I'm in that mode lately.
Some shit my hoe in at first. I didn't know what to expect. I almost had a nervous breakdown, a mental train wreck, cultural shock, your body, cultural anxiety, a third world countries don't mix. Over 3 days, I played the hotel, just observing, but started feeling sick, cause I knew my heart was yearning for something more. So I took a little tour and I ended up downtown and took a look around. So many people, it seemed millions, so many colors, but they were all Brazilian. I thought, damn, what a sight to see. They spoke a different language, but they was just like me. Now I'm leaving New York life behind me, to a place with nobody to find me.
in beautiful PA, not Pennsylvania, Puerto Alegre, in southern Brazil where they live like snow. Where you can drink caipirinhas at a churrasco, and it's capoeira in the park till it gets dark. The way they move, they make it look like art. And speaking of which, we got with some of the illest writers, where mags don't exist, so they can never be biters. Oh, Jamios is a hard act to follow. Wild imagery, courtesy of Sao Paulo. It's a place where they embrace hip-hop like the Bible, and look up to Sabotage like an idol. No gunplay at the show, so it's safe to go. No censorship, they say fuck on the radio. And females, please don't even make me start. I give every last one of them a piece of my heart.
So I'm leaving, do you look like behind me?
Puerto Alegre in southern Brazil, where they live like slow, where you can drink guaraná with the people you know, and you can have a conversation without saying a word, because the eyes spoke clear every time on the curb. And if you don't speak Portuguese, then don't even stress, because now means no, a thumb up means yes. Don't rent a car, because you never find a parking space, but if you're hungry, you can walk to the marketplace. The public parks are so beautiful, and if you meet somebody there, it's not what's up, you say you're wrong. Nobody stares for the clothes you wear. Nobody cares if your soul is there. You're from New York and you broke, you're still rich in AIs, because one US dollar equals three AIs.
Now I'm leaving New York right behind me.
Pennsylvania, Puerto Alegre, in southern Brazil, where they live life slow. But my 2 weeks was up, so I had to go. Back to New York, where everybody's got issues. Even if you ain't listening, they still discuss them with you. And they act like it's so hard to smile. You offer an inch, but they want 5 miles. You get depressed just to mesh with the rest of them, cause making money's first and being happy means less to them. It's where they carry big chips on their shoulders, work hard most their life just to retire when they older, and resent all the years wasted. And it's a place where the tension's so thick in the air that you can taste it. But there's a place where the love grows higher. I'm reminded every time I listen to Tim Meyer.
Now I'm leaving New York life behind me.
I've been just talking a little bit through email to my first girlfriend, who's married now, lives out in Vancouver. Despite my audio visual wizardry, I have a lot of problems with Skype. That stupid fucking program never seems to work right for me, but she's just like, hey, we should talk on Skype sometime, and I can't even talk to Ian on Skype, it's just not working. So I was like, well, I'll get a calling card or something, maybe I'll give you a call sometime. I don't know, it's just weird, like, she's like, yeah, I still got the same phone and the same phone number. Or when I mentioned to her that I'm talking about my first girlfriend, when I mentioned to her I'm doing this music video show now, you know, it's like, hey, if you know any cool videos, send them my way. And she's like, hey, you remember I didn't have TV when I was growing up. My parents didn't own a TV or let me watch TV. And that's true, but I'd totally forgotten that. I guess it's just these presumptions of that, I don't know, it's just weird. It hit me weird of just like, these things as though we're still close, you know? You remember this? You remember that? Surely you do. Because we're only a hop, skip, and a jump away, but it doesn't feel like that to me. It feels like it's been a long fucking time. And it all kind of accumulated a couple of days ago in me waking up in the middle of the night. Another time when nobody was home, everybody was gone for the weekend. My parents have this, like, cabin thing out in the woods they go to a lot, so it was just me in the house. Otherwise, I probably would have been more self-conscious, but it was like 2 in the morning, and I was in this sort of half-sleep, you know? Like, not really asleep, but laying in bed, really exhausted, and just went into one of those kind of, it's like a guided dream, you know? It's not a dream, it's just my imagination, but it's starting to slip away from me, and it can give it a sense of vibrancy and reality that you don't normally get. And I started thinking of the last time that I saw my ex. in this bookstore on Davie Street in Vancouver. And we were talking about this book. It's called The Life of Pi. Maybe you've heard of it. It's famous as fuck. I can never finish it. Something about the writing style of it just really was very annoying to me. I would love, though, whoever marketed that book. If I ever wrote a fucking book, man, I want them on my team. Every fucking bookstore, every fucking airport, everywhere you go, this tiger drawing on the front. Life of Pi, the stupid fucking book, but shit. Anyway, I was thinking back to that day, and it was vivid, like I was there, and I just found myself imagining that I was giving her a hug and just telling her how much I missed her. And that fucking snapped out of that, and all of a sudden I'm awake and I'm just crying like a fucking baby. It was ridiculous. But then it's like, do I really miss her like that? I don't know. Probably not. And it's like, it's a moot point. She's fucking married now, you know? So it feels weird to, you know, I'm reticent. I hesitate to get back in touch more than just through email, because I don't know, I just think it's gonna probably be better. I'm sure it would probably make me feel more well-rounded and less issue-filled, sort of smooth out this wrinkle, and I don't know, but it's tricky. I don't know. I don't want to just, it'd be hard to make small talk, I think. And can't really make big talk, not the kind of big talk I would want to make, because it's over, it's done, she's with somebody else. She did send me this thing, though, the other day that I gotta play. I'll play it right here. She just hooked up with some musician chick. She was always a really good singer. They're gonna try to put together some kind of little musical project. So she was looking online for just resources about songwriting, and she found this one that it's kind of dopey, but it's this chick who's explaining how to free associate when you're writing songs. And this ties into my well-publicized hatred of New York, which I hated so much that even though I barely talked to her, even my ex from Vancouver was aware of. Really nothing funny about New York. I guess that's the killer for me. Everybody knows New York is a big, dirty, fucking rude, loud, obnoxious, overcrowded, rat-filled hellhole, but they say it like it's a funny thing. Like, hey, isn't this its wacky persona? Oh, it's New York. It's fun because it's fucked up. And I just don't find anything fun about it. Nothing at all. I guess I didn't get the fucking joke. Just seemed miserable to me. Anyway, this rambling free association by this random YouTube chick really cracked me up, because I can fucking relate.
We're going to learn how to write a song, and in this clip, we're going to learn about how to pick a theme. I have no idea. Why don't you throw a theme at me, Mr. Cameraman?
New York in the wintertime.
New York in the wintertime. This is my thing. I got to write about New York in the wintertime. Let's do a stream of consciousness verbally right now. New York in the wintertime. It's cold and it's sleeting and I'm walking and I'm freezing and I'm cold and I'm thinking, why did I move here? Why did I move here? I don't know. And everything's wet from my head to my toe. And I'm thinking, why did I move here? Why did I move here? And there's no such thing as a fireplace anymore. No such thing at all. You know, improvise and on that theme and just go with it and see how it connects personally to you. For me, I start thinking about, why am I here in New York? I could be in Canada. At least in Canada, you know, this is where I'm from. At least in Canada, in the wintertime, there's snow and it's beautiful and people have dinner parties. But, you know, and I'm cold and I'm wet and I'm trying to hustle and bustle in New York in the wintertime. But at least in Canada, there were sleds and there was snow.
I knew this kid named Alberto. Funny style cat and his girl look like a turtle. Not Lisa Turtle, just a turtle. High school track, he ran a hurdle. His fear shed tears in your year when he got murdered. Now Alberto was your average A student. Participated in class, never came late and never chewing. His family was picture perfect, his older sister was prom queen. His dad a decorated vet for the Vietnam team. His mother was Dear Abby, an ordinary housewife. Like clockwork, always had dinner on a table at 5. But Alberto had a monster he kept under his bed. And instead of letting it out, he just got a girlfriend instead. She knew something was funny, she could tell by his behavior. Or the way he flamboyantly shook his hand when he would wave to her. She thought nothing of it and just
shoved it in the closet until the day the word dripped out like leaky faucet. Alberto was homosexual. I ain't have nothing against it. But little Ronnie Johnson and all his football player friends did. They always pick a nag, call him back and such and couldn't wait to get the gym so they could really bust his nuts. The gym teacher never cared. He just joined in on the action. Make silly gestures and compare him to Michael Jackson. Alberto couldn't take it. He just stopped showing up. And whenever he walked the halls, he just felt like throwing up. And at night, he would cry and cry and ask God why. Like, God, why in the fuck I had to be born this way? God would reply, son, you gotta show him you're more than gay. You gotta show him you're more than gay. See, he had dreams to be a track star. Until the warm April night, them gay jokes went way too far. Ronnie begged for his forgiveness and invited him to a party. Cause his parents went away and left him plenty of Bacardi. Alberto kindly accepted, he was finally accepted. Except it was all deception and left him all unprotected. It was a plan, Ronnie had scammed to get him in the right place. Verbally degrade him and rearrange his pretty face. The plan would go swiftly, they started calling him sissy. One punch turned into 50, they beat him till he was dizzy. Now Alberto lie in blood while his peers look on in fear. He took his last breath and passed away his senior year. Needless to say, it was one big tragedy. And how was Ronnie gonna explain it to his family? While they were on vacation taking in sights, he got wasted and killed the kid that night. Don't be a slave and behave the way they do. Just utilize the gifts that God gave you. Don't be a slave and behave the way they do. Just utilize the gifts that God gave you. Don't be a slave and behave the way they do. Just utilize the gifts that God gave you. Don't be a slave and behave the way they do. Just utilize the gifts that God gave you. I knew this girl named Maria, bright and talented with aspirations to be a big superstar. What a great idea, until she fell off and started listening to her peers. Oh dear, now Maria was your typical obnoxious analytical headstrong rebel flipping off the principle. Single mother home structure, she looked after baby brother while moms worked two jobs just to buy supper. Pops was a struggling musician, troubled man juggling family and heroin addiction. He overdosed and left a notice of eviction and a crate of records on a table in the kitchen. And a little angel with a keen sense of sound who saw solace in the record she found. And she would stay up late at night reciting songs to herself under pale moonlight, right and wrongs that her pops made. Promised her mom she would never go the same route. Turns out Carrie Ann had other plans. Her and her man Roddy, most popular, second best to nobody. Homecoming queen versus ugly duckling, and the story ends the same way. Okay, Ronnie's parents went away for a couple of days and told him no drinking. What the fuck was they thinking? Maria was oblivious that her boyfriend had already been invited. So when Carrie Ann asked, she got all excited. Like, damn, now I got something to look forward to. Or so she thought. Maria kindly accepted. She was finally accepted. Accepted was all bullshit. Now pay attention. Carrie Ann hated Maria cause she could sing, so she scored a bag of heroin. But the craziest thing was Maria never touched drugs, she did that night. And when the man was getting beat, she was nowhere in sight. Now her boyfriend lie in blood and she had no idea. Alberto passed away and she got hooked her senior year. Needless to say, it was one big tragedy. And I hate to break it, but it doesn't end happily. A warm day in May, the sky was so beautiful. Carrie Ann died in a crash, leaving the funeral.
All right, as a preamble, that was a lot more than I expected. I'm assuming that I seeded a song or two into there just to break it up a little bit. But now I'm going to get to the meat of the show, which is, I've been thinking about this for a week or so now, because I've been kind of feeling misty-eyed and nostalgic. And I threw on the Paper Cut Chronicles, a Gym Class Heroes album from 2005. And as much as I talk about how much I like that album, it's actually been a while since I listened to it just front to back. And just another thing, just holds up so well. Still really, really love it. And I realized that pretty much every fucking song on this album gives me a different memory of living in Vancouver, which was one of the most important formative times of my life. So I'm gonna play this fucking album top to bottom. I'm gonna play every fucking song except the shitty Paper Cuts remix that sucks. If you're at all familiar with the newer Gym Class Heroes stuff, you know that band just keeps getting more and more fucking retarded. It's just like, yeah, it's not what it was. But this one album, really fucking good. So I may have told some of these stories before, but now I'm gonna combine them all together and see what comes to mind as I listen through this album. So this first song is the title track, The Papercut Chronicles, with a weird little intro first, which even the intro kind of cracked me up, where it's just like talking this like phony deep shit that's not really deep at all, a little computer voice that then says like, you know, and this shit does not make any sense at all. Or does it? No. Welcome to the Papercut Chronicles. I just thought that was funny. But I saw this band the first year I went to the Warped Tour, 2005, I guess it was, or 2004? I don't remember. Anyway. And bands have half-hour sets. And it was just amazing. Every song was so good. I saw them again the year after. And they were starting to play new shit, and it was not the same. It was quite shit. You could just immediate night and day differences, but this was just like the most excellent half hour. I don't even remember what band I watched before. Who is that like gutter punk band? What are they even called? Big mohawks and studded leather jackets and shit. I think it was them, whoever they were. And as I was, that band ended, and as I was walking away, I heard the opening chords of the song, or the strums, and I was like, shit, that sounds really cool. And it was just like a fishing hook. It just hooked me, pulled me back to the stage, and just fucking miraculous, fucking awesome half hour show. If I could time warp back to times in my life, I would go back to that one. That would be really great. Even though, like, it's hard for me to get into songs the first time I hear them, but everything just hit right away. And this song itself sounds a bit like he's talking about a girl, but you don't have to look too hard between the lines, but he's just talking about his own self-concept, his own ego, his own sense of self-worth personified as a chick. This is Paper Cuts by the Gym Class Heroes.
Hi. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to listen to some music? Well, this is your big chance. You see, music is much like a Progeria butterfly with a shadowy promenade of effervescence. It swoops down upon the misty mountains of darkness like a flirtatious flounder upon a non-reflective mirror. But what is this opaque window of comfort that we cannot overcome? It is a manifestation of gluttony. It is a forest of emptiness. And it is an ocean with no water except for that which fills it. So as you listen to this masterpiece, release yourself from the prison of captivity and let your soul free, because only a free soul can be captured by greedy soul thieves who will then sell them to leprechaun gold miners. But it is only when your soul is taken away that you can take it back, and this, my friend, does not make any sense whatsoever. Or does it? No, it does not. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the Papercut Chronicles.
She loves me, but she comes and goes when she pleases when the door shuts. It's like another paper cut, and I'm stuck with a handful of band-aids until she comes back around like them ceiling fan blades. Claims she loves me, but she cuts me into pieces when I'm sewed up. Here comes another paper cut, now I'm stuck with a handful of band-aids until she comes back around like them ceiling fan blades. We met 22 years back, fresh out the womb, now she consumes me. No room for selfies. Yeah, she's so demanding. Do this, do that. Don't forget to take your medicine. I hate it when her face is invading my head again. The welcome mat reads, please take off your shoes. But she disregards the statement. I've grown accustomed to bending my beliefs to satisfy your needs. But I'm fed up with plugging cuts every time they please. So I dip my pen in the puddle where the bloody mess has been, trying to end the struggle. But I love her. She's the reason for the lesions, man, I love her. I start bleeding when she's leaving, and every scar on my fingertip is a reminder of all the lessons learned, all my missions trying to find her. But I'll sit alone till she comes back home, and I'll be waiting by the phone.
Hello? She says she loves me, but she comes and goes when she pleases. When the door shuts, it's like another paper cut, and I'm stuck with a handful of band-aids till she comes back around like them ceiling fan blades. Claims she loves me, but she cuts me into pieces when I'm sewed up. Here comes another paper cut, and I'm stuck with a handful of band-aids until she comes back around like them ceiling fan blades. She don't live here no more. I heard she's staying down the street with a deadbeat that don't treat her right, with two badass kids, guilt and regret. And I'm willing to bet my last dollar that she's wishing she was kissing me. Man, the nerve of this bitch, part of my fridge, but it's been 10 days, and I'm getting kinda lightheaded. Maybe I'll write her a letter in a gentleman's way and send it with the hopes that she might get it. I can't believe I let her run all over me, but all I think about is when she's here and holding me. I love her, she's the reason for the lesions, man, I love her. I start bleeding when she's leaving, and every scar on my fingertip is a reminder of all the lessons learned, all my missions trying to find her in. I can't complain, I kinda like the pain. She ain't even got a name, she just lives in my brain. And says she loves me, but she comes and goes when she pleases. When the door shuts, it's like another paper cut. Now I'm stuck with a handful of band-aids until she comes back around like them ceiling fan blades. Claims she loves me, but she cuts me into pieces when I'm sewed up. Here comes another paper cut. Now I'm stuck with a handful of band-aids until she comes back around like them ceiling fan blades. Says she loves me, but she really thinks that I'm an asshole. She says she loves me, but my ears are too big. She says she loves me, but I pick my nose too much. She says she loves me, but she says I never really listened. She says she loves me, but I take too many pills. She says she loves me, but I never pay my bills. She says she loves me, but I wait until the last minute. She says she loves me, but I don't try hard enough.
I really love that song. I really think there's just like a classic simplicity to the way this album is. And to give some credit to the Gym Class Heroes, it's not like they changed up their sound just to fucking chase a following, because change is kind of was always a thing. I mean, they have an indie album that came up before this album that sounds very different, and then the two albums after both sound very different from this and from each other. Oh, there's a skunk. Must have got hit. I can smell you, dead skunk, wherever you are. But this, the setup here, I mean, just seeing them live and even just hearing the album, it's like, it's just the drummer, the bass player, the main guy rapping, and the guitar style is pretty consistent throughout this album of being simple strums and simple little picking loops, you know, very kind of minimalist and just in the background, and I just really like it. I mean, it's always a cool thing when you have like a rap kind of group with live instrumentation, but I've never heard anybody I like as much as this band in this one album. I just really like the sound of it. So after I saw that half hour show, I went straight over to their little tent and bought their album, which I wish, I still got the CD in my closet. I meant to bring it, I forgot to. I wish I had, because there were some emo band tropes already going on here. Like, their bass player guy that year had the swooped forward, you know, dreamy, swoopy emo Hitler haircut. And obviously it's somewhat of a downbeat album. I mean, it's like just a lot of introspection. And introspection, I mean, it kind of by its definition is going to be somewhat sullen, I think. Maybe that's just my own sense of life talking, but I mean, you know, if you really sit down and pull a fucking Proust and just consider yourself and your life, it's probably not going to be a laugh riot, you know, or it's at least going to be, there's a solemnity to it just because it's a serious endeavor. It's an undertaking you wouldn't take unless, you know, a certain seriousness to your nature. Sorry?
Walk some bird in ya.
A little ways, yeah. Just can't sleep today. Those are some construction dudes. I guess they're starting their day. Oh, yeah. Look at that. I was kind of thinking about walking across the Princess Margaret Bridge, but that reminds me, yeah, I went to see District 9 with Chris the other day, and he told me we had to take the other bridge because it's closed, so maybe I can't even walk it. So they're here to just to fucking get working, I guess. even that, just little silly things like that. Little just talking to somebody, exchanging a few words, definitely brings you up a notch. I mean, I was just discussing the inherent solemnity of introspective moods of thought, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, one of the emo tropes is that extremely weird and long song titles that I really don't remember the names of most of these songs, you know. As much as I like this album, I always had it on a little MP3 player. I guess back then I didn't have an MP3 player yet. I just had a CD player, but it could play MP3 CDs. Because I just moved out to Vancouver, so I burned a bunch of shit onto to CD. A bunch of MP3 CDs, a big stack of them. And that was it. That was what I had. And then occasionally, if it was real important, I'd buy a new album. This being one of them. But speaking of solemn songs, this one, there's a couple of songs on this album that dip down extra into the feeling bad about stuff territory, and this next one is one of those.
I'm just your ordinary citizen. They wait impatiently for me to sin again. But then again, I'm really mommy's little angel. But that angel on my shoulder got strangled for trying to tangle with his nemesis. He caught him on the wrong day and got cut like DJ spinning doubles. Fucking song play. I'm on my way to the store, ignoring the city, to purchase a pack of Marbreds with a stack of rolled pennies. I can go for Denny's, and my stomach holds plenty, but my pockets got holes. I guess their goal is to stay empty. Quite simply put, me and my pocket share interest. I'll never fall in love with that pretty green-eyed Tetris twice. Yeah, right. I learned my lesson the first time. I just couldn't keep up with the ever-changing Jordan line of foot apparel. Parallel to many clones, my eyes vision monochromes with 7 shades and 20 tones. Plus I breathe artistic, they eating everything I'm feeding them. Put myself in every paint and use my spit as matte medium. End results are my children. We share the same genes, cast the same reflections, and interpret the same dreams. Like whoa, like whoa, like whoa, like whoa, 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 whoa. And at night I roam these streets with absolutely no purpose. Feeling like I'm worthless. But contrary to my last statement, I feel fine, content with the fact that I know this city's mine. And at night I roam these streets with absolutely no purpose. Feeling like I'm worthless. But contrary to my last statement, I feel fine, content with the fact that I know the city's mine. I walk down dead end streets like I didn't see the sign, just to turn around and walk back. That's fine and dandy, but what's whack is the fact I'm still walking. Like thank God for Walkmans. I'm only on it cause these simple minded mortals make me sleepy. So what do? I resort to TV. A seemingly lousy attempt to numb myself with lackluster images and insignificant information, like Willis is really top bridges, just to have the upper hand in monotonous conversations. And for lack of better stimulation, I'm painting portraits of dysfunctional families with gloomy faces, rocking Don't Worry Be Happy t-shirts, and you're assuming I'm tasteless. You misconstrue it, but your babies will embrace it. The basic essentials of a very bitter young man that kicks rusty soda cans and walks on decrepit bricks with a permanent pair of headphones, trying to make these lectures stick. I'll let them protesters pick it like they're gonna make a difference, and watch them die before they realize that their cause was non-existent. Like their cause was non-existent. And at night, I roam these streets with absolutely no purpose. Feeling like I'm worthless. But contrary to my last statement, I feel fine, content with the fact that I know this city's mine. And at night I roam these streets with absolutely no purpose.
feeling like I'm worthless. But contrary to my last statement, I feel fine, content with the fact that I know this city's mine. Sidewalk, stepping on every single crack, reminiscing of that joke we used to say when we was snotty. You know, my purpose got defeated when my mom turned paraplegic. Plus, I failed my civil service exam. They said I cheated. Not to mention tainted urine samples and the attention span of a second grader. More fascinated with building blocks than wasting time stressing his daily lessons. Hence the Ritalin. I've been born with the wind like lucky lottery tickets since day one. And stepped on left cause right's wrong. So what do? I resort to friendly games of ping pong and sing a song in sixpence. I'm none the richer, I just kiss raw and lose and keep trucking. And at night, I roam these streets with absolutely no purpose. Feeling like I'm worthless. But contrary to my last statement, I feel fine, content with the fact that I know the city's mine. And at night, I roam these streets with absolutely no purpose. Feeling like I'm worthless. But contrary to my last statement, I feel fine, content with the fact that I know the city's mine.
You know, ever since I came back from Vancouver and especially New York, I'm always shocked at how rustic my hometown is. I mean, it's like 50 or 60,000 people. It's not so bad. You know, it's got a movie theater and a fucking couple bowling alleys and a couple Blockbusters, you know, like it's got shit. And I always would just kind of stick to the main city, but I mean, here I've only been walking 40 minutes, I guess. And it's like really just fucking rustic, man. I'm on like a rural route. They call it RR. RR number whatever. And it's kind of like a highway, but there's nobody on it this time of night. And it's just like occasional, like a gas station here and there. Houses sort of set away from the street. Quite a bit of land around, tons of trees. And I mean, I'm on fucking foot, you know? It's hard to get anywhere on foot. I'm already just kind of like in this other world. Like, if you wanted to get to a place like this, if you lived in New York, you just couldn't. You know, I remember one day in Queens walking around, I was listening to Henry Rollins' spoken word thing, and it just hit me, like, man, if I just wanted to get out of here to the woods, not some Central Park bullshit, but like really just out of this fucking place, how could I? It would be ludicrously impossible. But then, as I was leaving, with Kale and Firefighter Chick, Keith and the Girl fans, who gave me a ride home. Just, it doesn't really take that long in the scheme of things to get out of New York City and at least just to be in New York State, where it's still pretty fucking sparse and anemic as far as like forests and stuff go compared to Canada, but it's still a lot nicer. And just feeling myself pull away, and it's so easy. It was so easy. It's just like, we've been driving for 40 minutes and we're out of it. We're gone. Just pulling away, like pulling away from a fucking vortex. And it really made me feel kind of ridiculous for staying so long. Like, I mean, part of it was I didn't want to leave and fuck up my roommate Relic and leave him, you know, to find a new roommate or have to pay rent. And the big part of it was that I met Ian and I wanted to try to squeeze as much out of that relationship as I could. But I should have been two trips maybe. Live in New York for like a few months and then leave for a few months and come back for a few months. Staying there for like whatever it was, a year and 4 months. Insane. Fucking ridiculous. Way too long. And I realized it as I was leaving, just like I made a huge mistake. That was dumb. But I always would move places with the intention of trying to make it work. And my mindset has changed a lot on that now. It's like, if I move to Montreal, say, and I only stay 6 months, that's fine. If I go back out to Vancouver, 6 months, that's fine. It's not some kind of fucking failure if I don't build a whole new life for myself. It's not that hard to move around in this world. I'm at some little fancy pants rock garden with a little mini waterfall somebody made. Yeah. Moving, it's tough, but it ain't that fucking tough. But I think the tone of that song, as much as I like it, it's a little too sullen to really feel like it fits with my own self-concept, my own sense of my own life. But I do have a specific memory of that song. I was listening to that exact song while I was walking around my neighborhood in East Van by, what are those stops called? Renfrew and there's two R's stops right next to each other. I don't even remember the names of there's only two subway lines in Vancouver. I don't even remember the monorail lines. Anyway, I was walking along there and late at night listening to that song, and I almost just like stumbled onto a homeless guy just sleeping by one of the SkyTrain pillars. And it was just kind of shocking to be that close, to be standing right next to a homeless guy. And like, there he is, and you can see him clear as day. I don't know. Just weird because I almost stepped on him, and just weird because there's a human being who needs fucking help. But what do you do? What can you do? Nothing. But I did have, speaking of moving, it was very hard when I first moved to... Man, what is the timeline now? Shit, maybe I did have this album at this point. Yeah, and like... I'll get into stories very soon about when I very first got to Vancouver, and I did meet some people and had some friends, but then I fell sort of out of touch with them, and I didn't have a job yet, and I even applied at a McDonald's, the one on Boundary and Broadway, or whatever Broadway turns into, which was actually a fucking very nice McDonald's, nicest McDonald's I ever saw. It had fireplaces and shit, but... God, it would have been a nightmare. Anyway, yeah, I didn't have a job, fallen out of touch with my new friends, didn't really talk that much to my old friends, because I didn't really have a landline or a phone, and I'm just bad at communicating anyway, and I didn't have a computer, nothing. Very isolated. Very Spartan existence I had in this place. I had a couch that came with the apartment, so I pretty much just slept on that. Had a little laptop that was really old, Windows 95 laptop, that I deliberately got an old one so I couldn't play games on it. I could only write. So I just had like a fucking... Did I even have the library card at that point? I think I did. So a stack of library books next to a computer, some CDs, and it just would go stir crazy. Like, I just didn't know what to do. I always have a hard time writing unless I'm really feeling inspired. I can't force myself to do it. I didn't want to blow a bunch of money because I didn't have a job yet. Or I had a job and I quit it. Didn't have a new job yet. And I kind of wanted to get out of the hair of these people that I met, which was probably a bad idea. I kind of should have tried to keep in touch with them a little more. But I'd been sleeping on their couches and shit and kind of overstaying my welcome. Anyway, so I remember one night staying up all night. Couldn't really sleep. Sun is up real early in the morning. Go to this McDonald's, get some breakfast, and just being so sleep deprived and so isolated and just everything getting so weird that I would think about movies. Yeah, I totally had the library card because the Vancouver Library had a section of books about movies, and to read like Mark Kermode's fucking novella-length dissertation on The Terminator or some shit was, like, really interesting to me. And there was a book about Shawshank and Pulp Fiction and Trainspotting and, like, books about movies that I liked. And I thought that was pretty fucking interesting and kind of cool. But I remember I could, like, think about scenes in movies that had really affected me. And they would hit me really hard. Again, like I was talking about what's going on with me lately, watching scenes from shows and having tears. It'd be the same type of thing, except just remembering stuff and being like, man, that was such a beautiful moment. That was such an excellent piece of storytelling. Just to jump tracks a little bit, I'm walking down this stretch of road, this rural highway thing that I've never walked down before. It's always just been with cars. And I'm walking past stuff that I thought was really far away. It's weird that it actually seems closer on foot than it does in a car, because it just seems like it should be inaccessible on foot. Like I should be able to walk forever and never get to these places, but here I am. So I walked past this one hotel where I remember my friend Adam, when I was a kid, had a birthday party there once. I remember swimming around in their pool, and that was when Gauntlet was the big arcade game. We had a bunch of quarters, played a bunch of Gauntlet. And now I'm walking by this other place that I couldn't have been here long, but I think like it was like a sort of daycare type, look after you after school type of place. And I remember they played Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And after I saw Large Marge for the first time, which is, it's these guys, the Kyoto brothers, that did Killer Clowns from Outer Space. They did stop motion special effects a lot in the 80s. Pee-wee Herman basically runs into this this ghost trucker who gives him a ride, and then her true face is revealed. And as a kid, it just scared the fucking piss out of me. After I saw it once, I closed my eyes every time. I couldn't watch it. And if you go watch that now, go look up Pee-wee's Playhouse, fucking Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Large Marge. It's laughable, man. It's silly, but it scared the fuck out of me as a kid. That was actually a really good movie, that first Pee-wee Herman one. Phil Hartman co-wrote it. Then they did another one after that was god-awful, but I was shocked at how well that first one holds up. So on to the next Gym Class Heroes song. I got some memories from this one too, the Makeout Club. But let's listen to it first. And this is a good example of the weird sort of weirdness of this transition was gonna happen that I shouldn't have been so surprised about, I guess. Just the transformation of this band seemed so severe and shocking to me, but... And, like, would I want them to try to recreate this? The little plinky guitar style? Maybe it just... Maybe this was it. Maybe this was the burst of inspiration. Maybe it wouldn't work a second time. But this is a song that's kind of like just a funny song about his ex-girlfriends. Lyric-wise would fit right in with their later stuff. But the music still has this kind of plinky... Something about, like, this style, this music, it just makes me feel like I'm inside this guy's head. It just... Even though this is kind of just a silly, funny song, the tone of the music is more... Solemn seems like such a weird word to use in regards to this album. Because it's fun to me to listen to this album, and it is. It's like a fun, cool album, but... But this is the kind of thing that in the new Gym Class Heroes would be, like, blaring trumpets and shit. It wouldn't have this cool... introspective feel. Like, what I'm trying to say is even the silly, goofy songs have this introspective vibe to them that I really miss.
If I recall correctly, it was the middle of spring, walking with my boys, contemplating what summer would bring. We started talking about girls, and it was the funniest thing as I started remembering some of my funniest things. And there was Ashley. She caught my eye the very second as she passed me. I kissed her once, then she started to harass me. She called all night long. I had to buy a brand new phone. And let me see, there was Melanie. To have a mouth like that should be a felony. Wouldn't believe half the shit that she was telling me. I mean, dirty vocab. She used to talk like she was grown. And after that, there was Tiffany. The one with the cute cousin. Are you kidding me? She had a man, but that didn't mean shit to me. He tried to catch us all the time, but I was just too goddamn smooth. And can't forget to mention Carrie. But that situation quickly got scary. Cause after 2 days, she's like, let's get married. What? Can you believe that shit? I had to pack my bags and move. They say I gotta change my evil ways. And I'm working hard on it every day. But no matter what I do, I seem to make the same mistakes that I'm trying not to. If love is just a game that people play, your practice makes perfect is what they say. But no matter what I do, I seem to make the same mistakes that I'm trying not to. I'll always remember Monica, the Jewish chick. She'd always give me gifts for Hanukkah. To me, the folks, she tried to make me rock a yarmulke. But she looked so damn good, she almost made my ass convert. And after that, there was Lisa. You know she had a twin sister, Teresa. I bumped into them at camps getting pizza. The greatest night of my life, slept the rock that killed two birds. Then there was Erica. She had the stankiest breath in North America. I tried to slip her Tic Tacs, but they were scared of her. And when we made out, I always had to plug my nose. And I suppose you know your sister. Chill, I swear by hand I gotta only kissed her. I got her for the fetish, but she got a lot of blisters. I mean, hammer top feet, you think she had dead bugs for toes? Oh no! They say I gotta change my evil ways. And I'm working hard on it every day. But no matter what I do, I seem to make the same mistakes that I'm trying not to. If love is just a game that people play, your practice makes perfect is what they say. But no matter what I do, I seem to make the same mistakes that I'm trying not to. Yo, Matt, remember Catherine? She talked so much, I used to make her bring me aspirin. Blah, 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 I'm doing fine, thanks for asking. I even tried to make a muzzle, but her mouth just would not quit. And oh shit, remember Shauna? I hate to bring her up again, I didn't wanna. That girl I talked about in that girl a dog song. Yeah, the poster girl for Paxil almost made me lose my grip. And oh shit, then there was Crystal. The meth head she used to sniff like a pistol. One time she chased me down the street with a pistol. She tried to
USA, I took a stash. She bugged out and tried to kill my ass. And at last we got Kimmy. She went abroad, came back and broke up with me. And so I ripped up all the letters that she sent me. I cried for like 3 days, then it was back to my evil ways. They say I gotta change my evil ways, and I'm working harder to death every day. But no matter what I do, I seem to make the same mistakes that I'm trying not to. If love is just a game that people play, your practice makes perfect is what they say. But no matter what I do, I seem to make the same mistakes that I'm trying not to. Change my evil ways, and I'm working harder than every day. But no matter what I do, I seem to make the same mistakes that I'm trying not to. If love is just a game that people play, your practice makes perfect is what they say. But no matter what I do, I seem to make the same mistakes that I'm trying not to.
I've been thinking about this kind of thing lately, since being in my hometown and just being exposed more to these kind of more rural houses. It's like, instead of being, like, there's something very cool about living in a city, you know, when it's a reasonable city, not New York City, and, you know, you can just walk out of your house and all around you is all kinds of shit and all kinds of people and all kinds of places to go and restaurants and museums and go see bands and be in the fucking flow. And then the very opposite has got to be this kind of stuff, where you live far enough out that, you know, you kind of live on sort of a highway type road and you don't have sidewalks even. It's just kind of, you need a car, absolutely need a car, because you can't get anywhere without one. And it's really just like a statement of like, I don't want to be a part of this shit. I'll go into town if I got to. Go to the bakery and buy some fucking cookies or coffee or whatever the fuck, but I'm going to spend most of my time in my house with my family. We're just going to hang out here. That's the center of our life is going to be this. It seems kind of nice. So, the Makeout Club. Okay, let me, basically, so I got to Vancouver. Right away, I found an apartment. It was a little too expensive. And also, pretty quickly, I found a job. So, I was living in a spare room in this guy's basement apartment. Gay Andre, I didn't know he was gay at the time, and I got a job as a dishwasher, and the dishwasher job was miserable. I never worked a full-time job in my life, and it was a really intense one too. It was hard work, man. That was a busy restaurant. Miserable time. Really didn't like working there. And then the day that I finally had enough, got fed up and quit, was the day that Gay Andre, who was a really creepy in his 50s, looked like Gollum, leathery skin, skullet, which is a bald guy with a mullet, greasy Frenchman, had like 18 beer and decided to hit on me because he thought I was gay. Disasters all around. But luckily, upstairs was a girl named Jennifer. I'm sure I've talked about some of these stories before, but this girl, Jennifer, was just one of these, like, magically fucking awesome people. This little recorder I got could certainly use, a pre-warning that your SD card's almost full. Instead, it just stops all of a sudden, and then next time you look down to check, it's like, card full. Oh, sorry. Although I was checking pretty often just because I was worried about my batteries. So let's back up a step, see if I end up repeating myself. But I was talking about Jennifer, the girl who put me up in Vancouver. So she was just this magically awesome person. Beautiful, blonde, fun, smart, just so easy to get along with. Just seemed like, I mean, I didn't know her extremely well, but just like, just the perfect person. Like, what is there not to like? Reminded me a lot of Cole from New York, who, if you go check out Keith and the Girl TV 19, The Burger Off, she's the one who wins. Same story. Blonde, pretty, smart, funny, friendly, easy to get along with. Just the total package. Ridiculous. Ridiculously fantastic people you just run into sometimes in your life, and you're just like, man, how is that a real person? That's crazy. So this girl, Jennifer, also her boyfriend was a pro skater. He was out of town at first, but then he rolled back in and like was showing me his DVDs and like, here's the DVD of my skate company that I'm with, and there's me doing shit, and like, just cool as shit, man. Just so cool. And also just like well-rounded, like crazy. Like she... Weird, I thought I heard somebody walking across the street, but I think it was actually my own footsteps echoing. Because besides the occasional car going by, it's like so quiet out here. Weird. Yeah, so, like, being a young hot girl, Jennifer was big into, you know, dance clubs and stuff. And the first time I ever went to a full-on shitty dance club... No, I guess not the first time. I mean, I'd been to them in my little crappy hometown. But the first time I went to a real one in Vancouver was with her and her friends, her group. But then my dishwashing job that I had when I moved out there was just a miserable job. And I quit that job. And then that night I came home and my landlord, who was this squirrely, very unattractive older French guy... was really drunk. He's like 18 beer in, but I was like, fuck it, man, I just quit my job. And he's like, well, sit down there, have a beer with me. And I was like, I fucking will, just shooting the shit with him. And that's the night I found out that he's gay, and he really kind of hit on me way too forwardly. Like, you know, I really tried to let him down easy when I saw what was happening and didn't want things to be awkward because I needed to live there. But instead, since he was drunk, instead of taking the signal, he's like, Keith, you make me feel very horny. And just awkward. I didn't know what to do. You know, I just was like, okay, I'll talk to you later, Andre. Went to bed, but it's like, I don't know. I was like, what do I do now? Can I really live with this guy? Or I guess I didn't go to bed. I retreated to my bedroom. But then that night, Jennifer and her friends were going to the Cobalt, the punk club in Vancouver. Because she had a friend who was in this fucked up, super abrasive metal band, and like the Cobalt is one rough ass place. It is like, imagine your stereotypical punk club where everything's all fucked up and there's no doors on the bathroom stalls and it's just a mess. And it's worse than that. It's fucking, it's a cool ass place. I guess maybe it's just because I do have a bit of a, I mean, I've got my good friends, but I'm not a person that can just easily maneuver my way through social situations. And Jennifer really was just magical, you know? She had all the cool hipster friends, but she also had, like, the metalhead friends. She just had the whole gamut. She just was friends with everybody. Like, that's the kind of thing that wears me out. I find it such a burden to try to be sociable with a lot of people for a long time. And she had no problems. She took me in as easily as she took in other people, and I just really appreciated that about her and really respected it. It was just really great. Because, I mean, the general sort of nerd rejection of others, I mean, it's really mostly a defense mechanism. And when I do it, I'm sure it's the same reason. So the fact that she didn't feel that she needed those defenses, that's a strength that I wish I had, that I always really liked. Anyway, it became pretty clear I just couldn't stay at the Andre place, but I had nowhere to go, so the girls upstairs let me stay on their couch for a couple of weeks, and I pushed it too hard. I really took advantage of that situation too much, because I think I was just kind of in some shell shock. I had just moved to Vancouver, had this horrifying job that I had quit, that I hated. It was a miserable time. Had all these problems with my landlord. Could be potentially homeless. Just trouble all around. And they took me in, and it's like, man, thank fucking God. What if they had not? You know, what would I do? And just being back in a normal situation. I always enjoyed having roommates. I always liked, even just the year before I left for Vancouver, I lived in a house with these guys, and it was really fun. I liked the community of it. So being in their household just was, like, addicting to me. It was like, in a normal, stable environment. So I was there for, like, 2 weeks, and I wasn't really looking hard enough to find a place, and eventually they kind of... Jen would have let me stay. She really didn't mind. She's a fucking saint. But the other girls, which was fine. I have no grudges because, I mean, it's their house. And I didn't even really realize how much I was just taking the situation for granted. But I really was. I was leaning on it too hard. So they were like, listen, you're sorry, but you really gotta move on.
Jackson Pollock throwing multicolored thoughts at a rapid pace. I make a mess, you dissect it and make sense of it. Then get back to me at your earliest convenience. Check my verbal sequence as I texturize this track. 7 layers to be exact. Eliminate the whack with a firm brushstroke. IMC painterly. Lyricists begin crumbling from my scumbling technique. As I tweak your audio and visual, keep my drips minimal. Messages subliminal, cause me and rap go way back. We compliment, so together we enhance one another. That's common sense, high intensity. Catches the eye, your jaw drops, be a real critic. Not explicit with false props, I keep my darks deep, my lights bright. I'm very thorough with my chiaroscuro, inspiration sparked in the night. Now watch me rock the spot like Basquiat, minus the heroin. And make my face popular like Andy did to Marilyn. It's kinda scary when Will Hart gets left behind while they take bullshit and start selling it to blind folks. But I remain humble as long as Grace Grill continues spinning hot shit on his twin 1200 color wheels of steel. Fuck mass appeal, art is art. Only the real can truly feel it. So open your eyes and listen. Combine your ears with vision. Or do it because you love it or for cash. That's your decision.
That's your decision.
It's your decision.
That's your decision.
That's your decision.
It's your decision.
It's like I'm torn between two worlds, a paintbrush and a microphone, a canvas or a beat, CD or a P, anything goes when my ink pen flows, and God only knows where it's gonna bring me next, so I'm inclined to like paint rhymes and spit kaleidoscopes with one eye closed, and I suppose if you chose the path that I chose, you know the cycle, asshole, don't front it goes, inspiration and productivity, then a sense of self-worth, and in steps depression like back and forth and back, should I? Paint a picture or record a track, a gift or a curse. I don't know, I'm still undecided. But over the years, I found clever ways to hide it. And those that lack the passion I have may despise it. But my mama may be this way, I think of every day. So tell them kids to keep coloring outside the lines until they lose their limitations and their minds is free. Tell them teachers that you want your money back this time. And tell Bob Ross, thanks for all the happy little trees. And tell my mama that a baby boy's doing just fine. Although he's running out of patience, but his mind is free. And tell my pops that I pay his money back sometime, and that his son is 2 steps away from where he needs to be.
Okay, so that's King Street. So before they kill it, let me give you their number so you can let them know that it's in your store, or in their store, okay? Because they will kill it. They'll think it's a mouse. Yeah, they have mouse traps. 458, write this number down. Write the number down. Are you listening? Do you have a pen? Hello? What a fucking knot. Pardon my language.
Somebody lose their pet or something?
She said she was in a store. In my store. And I said, you wouldn't have been in this store. Anyways, she said, well, I was in a store. And she said, I was playing with my hamster, and the hamster bit me. And so she said, and it clung to her fingers, so she shook her hand, and the hamster fell, and it went under the chips. So I said, really? I said, they do have the sticky thingies from the PCO, like for festival.
Right.
And I said, I kept trying to tell her to call the store, and she wasn't listening. Like she was.
Well, that's a bad sign, too. And it's like, which side of the river? Where
yeah,
are
really.
You
know, like, I could be on the top of the hill or the bottom of the hill. Anything else, hon?
Nope, that's it.
That is only 7:06. And she said, oh, no, you've got. What is it? Oh, no, you've got mouse traps. They'll kill my hamster.
Call the store.
It's hung up on me.
Wow. Well, hopefully it'll all be uphill from here, I guess.
Yeah.
Thanks
anyway,
a lot.
Sweetie, have a good day.
One coffee here.
Oh! Hey.
That probably makes me a creepazoid of some level that I'm like just recording random conversations with people at the gas station at 5 in the morning. I was hoping this would be a 24-hour gas station. I was pretty excited, but now it's 6 a.m. to midnight. But still, that's pretty good. Does that mean it's 6 a.m.? Holy fuck. That can't be possible. It's got to be a little earlier than that. Should probably just open. Maybe it's 5:30. I don't know. I mean, I've been walking for a while, but not that long. I thought I left at like 4, a little before 4, 3:30. Of course, it's bad anyway. That just weirdly reminds me of like the coffee shop I worked at in Vancouver, I worked a lot of graveyard shifts, and I don't know, man, there's like, it wasn't a good job, but like, there's a weird funness to that stuff. If you want it to be fun, you know, it can be worse. At least you don't have a boss there, and dealing with all the crazies, and a lot of times that was a bad scene, but then you'd get like the homeless dudes that they suggested this to me. They're like, hey man, for like some coffee and a muffin, I'll clean the bathroom for you. It's like, fuck yeah, here's the cleaning shit. I don't want to clean that fucking horrible bathroom. Go to it, man. And I remember the classic poetic moment is when I was sitting there one night, middle of the night, 3 a.m. or something. Nobody was in the store, just sitting there reading a paper, and I look up and a stretch limo is going by because it's right in downtown Vancouver. So I look down and read for another, you know, 10 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever. I don't need to explain exactly how many minutes, Aspie Keith. And next time I looked up in that exact same spot was an ambulance. I was like, yeah, that seems like it sums up a little bit of the Vancouver nightlife. So I had to boot her on out of Jen's house. But just from hanging out with her and her buddies, I had become friends enough with her friend Stephanie and her roommate Jay. These guys were like from Langley and were just friends. They weren't dating or anything. And they let me stay on their couch for a couple of weeks, which was really nice of them because they barely knew me. But I just have very fond memories of even just a little bit of time where Jay was a snowboarder, skateboarder, all that kind of stuff. The first time I'd ever seen longboards was in Vancouver. They're like long skateboards where it's like they're literally like surfing down the street. He could just do this crazy surfing shit. But he lent me one of his normal skateboards, or maybe it was a little longer than normal. And I remember I was trying to go down this pretty steep hill while he played tennis with his brother or his cousin or something. And I tried a bunch of times and I really actually hurt myself pretty bad. I don't have the scar anymore, but on my right elbow, like my shin, not shin, whatever, the part of your arm that's like a shin, just above your elbow, I scraped it so bad that it was a horrifying, gigantic gash, but I was just like proud of it. I was just in that phase of life of like, I want to get hurt. I want to expand what I can do. I want to have experiences. And I finally made it down that fucking hill. I even got to the point where at least when I fell off, I didn't just like grind and I road rash myself to death. I learned how to do some ninja rolls and stuff. And that first year that I went to the Warped Tour and saw the Gym Class Heroes, that was while I was at their place. And I'm sure it's a sign of my own psychology that having an apartment and a job, I was miserable. But at that point, I was homeless. I was couch surfing. And I was proud of that, just that I had pulled together these friendships enough so not to be homeless. And I already had this ticket to the Warped Tour that I got early. So I just was marveling at like this homeless dude going to the Warped Tour. And this is exciting. This is a fucking adventure. And it was. It was just super fun. And I got sunburned so bad that day, I didn't even think to put on sunscreen. Plus I had my giant fucking scabby thing, and just like would get in the shower and it hurt everywhere because I was sunburned, and hurt extra bad if anything touched that wound at all. It was a nightmare wound. I should have taken pictures if I had a camera. And just their neighborhood, I remember I was trying to be a better tenant or guest that time, so I would take them out to eat once in a while and buy food and stuff. Like they had a Church's Chicken near there, and go for the white meat. Don't get just the dark meat, even though it's cheaper, because once you get through like a 20 piece, it's fucking disgusting. But in that song Makeout Club, when he's talking about the meeting the two chicks at Cam's Pizza, there was a pizza place by their house that I don't remember the name of, but that I went to a lot, and I just remember well, and just that whole little neighborhood, and just hanging out with them, and it's like, you know, ideas are a dime a dozen. It's execution. Bringing things to fruition and actual creation is the hard part. But I remember me and Jay just talking about, like, I had no skills in video production of any kind back then. I guess people kind of got the vibe that I could write, or I was working pretty actively on a book. I think I probably must have brought it up just as something to talk about. And I remember him just talking with me about, like, man, I had this cool idea for like a movie or a script or something, like it would be so cool. Kind of like with the sort of nudge of like, we should work on this, which is something I get a lot from people. But it's just so hard to actually get a project together in any way. But I just remember hanging out with Jay in his backyard talking about that shit. And I just like, even though I was only there for 2 weeks, I have a lot of little stories. hanging out with them, and a lot of good memories. And for some reason, that song Makeout Club, that just makes me think of them. Who I haven't talked to in years, man, they would probably hardly remember me. I don't even know, I would probably recognize Stephanie, but Jay's, like, face, I don't remember what he looked like anymore. Ah, nostalgia, man. I need to go to bed. I went from just like, hey, have a nice little talk with the lady at the fucking gas station, to just like, now I'm just feeling like I miss people that I hardly knew, you know? This next song, it's Taxi Driver, I think is what it was called. This was actually the first Gym Class Hero song that I ever heard, but it didn't stick with me, and by itself it would have not stuck out. I bought the Warped Tour sampler because it was literally like $6. And it was a double album. And this song was on that. And it was actually their first sort of hit, where it's basically just clever references to contemporary emo bands. Because I guess they looked at themselves as part of this emo movement. Even though I don't feel like it's the same. I mean, it is the original term for emotion. Emotional or emotive music does fit with the subject matter of the Gym Class Heroes, but just not the tone. Like, what emo music in the 2000s, in the aughts, came to be known, came to mean, is like just whiny, just really whiny, really just self-pitying to the extreme. I really find that stuff distasteful. I just can't stand it, and I really never felt like Gym Class Heroes was part of that, which I think is also, like, my friend Mark was really into that kind of stuff when later on he came to visit me in Vancouver, and I tried to hook him on this album, and he just wasn't feeling it. He wasn't into it. So, and which is probably a good thing. Maybe that's a plus to that album. So here's Taxi Driver, a song that didn't stand out to me at first, but as a piece of the album, it's pretty clever and it's pretty fucking cool, and it's just a semi-autobiographical about the crazy nights that Travis, the singer for this band, would have when he was a cabbie, except cleverified by working in band names.
I took Cutie for a ride in my death cab. She tipped me with a kiss. I dropped her off at the meth lab. Before she left, she made a dashboard confessional and spilled her guts in cursive. But what's worse is I can still see her bright eyes like sunny day real estate. Oh my, in a funny way the ceiling tastes so high, but no chance. My little chemical romance left a bad taste in my mouth. But I opposed her like, hey Mercedes, why the long face? Why you crying? No need, just put on this cold heat and fall out. Boy meets girl, Jimmy eat world, but Schlepp eats pills till he's all out. Not once, not twice, she was thrice times a lady, acting all brand new. But I had to bounce over to the postal services to pick up these pills that take care of my nervousness. And on the way I saw planes and was looking for stars. She played games but she took them too far. At the drive-in, watching soft porn, and you can tell by the trail of the dead that there was something in the popcorn. Hopped in my cab, destination Midtown, just to get up with some kids that like to get down. I made my rounds and that was that. In between the frowns and scraps and heart attacks. And I remember I seen her ass early November on a Thursday, taking back Sunday for a refund. She shot a wink like no hard feelings, then she jetted to Brazil. Man, the pills had me spun.
Shower, and then I got a call saying that my cousin died in a fire. So I washed myself for what seemed like 3 hours with tears and rusty water. I need some of that Calgon take me away action immediately before I start scrubbing my hands hard repeatedly. I'm stuck somewhere lethargic between reality and a fucking tool video. Wake me up! I said goodbye too many times in these 22 long ones. Here I am waving again. So long, friend. I should have told her how this town doesn't like it when people leave, so it finds ways to keep them. It sows seeds and reaps them. Now she's part of that harvest, but different from all the others. Ask her mother how her smile touched souls and warm, cold hearts. Monique, I miss you. I wish I could have kissed you farewell and giving you that tattoo you always asked for. But when I'm done tatting thug life on God's stomach, you got next. I'm done. Y'all take what you want from it. I'm going to wash my hands. I miss you, girl.
As that super dramatic intro is fucking signifying, this is the other super heavy song on this album. This is the other down in the fucking dregs tune. And how I was saying that the first one, the first kind of sad song, was like a little too much. I couldn't totally sink my teeth into it. Something about this song, this one works for me so fucking good. This is like what a bad day feels like in my head, is this fucking tune. Which, of course, I don't actually know the name of. But I just wanted to jump in and interrupt here for a moment just to say that this album does get a little spottier toward the end. But here, this song is worth sitting up and taking notice of. This is a really good song.
Today's forecast partly cloudy with a good chance of rain, so I wear my sarcasm badge proudly and flash a devilish grin that'll make the most masculine of men skeptical of his existence. And when the rain begins, I'll take a seat to retire and admire the spectacle from a distance. For instance, there was this cat the other day shooting me ice grills, but when I looked, he looked the other way. Now any other day, I wouldn't let this type of shit bother me. Today it was enough to make my lucky charm soggy, so finally I stepped to him, kindly disrespected him, looked him dead in the eyes and analyzed how it affected him. He broke down in tears talking about how God neglected him. Deflate my swollen ego, then pop, pop went my God complex. I never thought 19 years after my first breath I'd be in art school surrounded by corny fucks debating who's more depressed. I'm 22 now and still can't deal with what's real, but I'll be damned if I give up and settle for pill shit. My daddy taught me better, mommy taught me how to crack 40s and jack six packs and oversized sweaters. Over time weather changes, so I'm in the rain waiting for the floodgates to open, impersonating my favorite VH1 behind the music tragedy. Catastrophe never tasted so acidic before. I'm pH balanced for the floor, but strong enough to stay afloat. And doggy paddle long enough to catch that life preserver rope. And then I'll be on a parallel ladder laughing like, damn, my man, for the love of Pete, what happened? Finally, I'll step to you, kindly disrespect you, look you dead in the eyes and analyze how it affects you. Watch you break down in tears, talk about how God neglected you. Wash away like your very last mask that got wet the second you struck it. Well, go ahead, relieve your stress, kick that bucket all you want. A cigarette that never matters what you're stuck with. You ever watch a whole day wash away like your very last mask that got wet the second you struck it? Well, go ahead, relieve your stress, kick that bucket all you want. A cigarette that never matters what you're stuck with. Wow.
stick out wet the second you struck it. We'll go ahead and leave your stress, kick that bucket on you want a cigarette. It never matters what you're stuck with. You ever watch a whole day wash away like your very last match? Stick out wet the second you struck it. We'll go ahead and leave your stress, kick that bucket on you want a cigarette. It never matters what you're stuck with.
Yeah, that song really, I really just think that really does capture what it feels like when I'm down. You know, it's still got some clever lines to it, still got some wordplay, still got a nice swing to it, and I like how in that song it's the other people that are lamenting how God fucking let them down, and how can world be so tragic, you know? I mean, I can get in some fairly somber, sullen moods, but yeah, I just really feel like it never hits the level that it does with some other people. Man, that's a good song. Holy balls, I like that song. Fuck. Now this next one, though, I really, this is the song I relate to least on this album. It's called Pillmatic, and it's breaks from the traditional band setup. It's way more of just, it's weird samples and a weird little loop. More of a rap song, and it's about his drug problems, which is something I've never had a big problem with drinking. Hardly ever tried drugs at all. I do remember I had some mushrooms that I got with my friends Aaron and Derek later on out in Vancouver. We were going to try them one night, and I probably would have done it, but our plans got derailed, didn't happen, so I just had these things in my house. And when I moved out of there, I ended up just leaving them. They were in a little canister like you would get film in back in the day, a little plastic one, and I just left them in a cabinet, and maybe someone will find them, recognize them, have some fun with them, I don't know. But I remember I did have, because I was also trying to help my girlfriend at the time through some various... She was pretty much done with drugs, but it was still a bit of an issue, you know? It had me researching drugs a lot more than I ever really had before. I'd always just kind of stayed away from them at a general principle, because I just didn't... I wasn't interested in the danger of it, you know? And researching drugs more, it's like... I did have, like, my long night of doubt of just, like, am I really missing out on something? Am I really going to regret that I never did this? Am I going to be expanded? And in the end, I decided, no, I'm not that type of dude. I'm not that person. And people can find ways to justify drugs all the time. And I ain't here to judge you. But at the end of the day, I've got a super drugged-out brother. My dad's a... you know, lifetime pothead. Apparently my grandpa was quite the alcoholic. I'm not coming from good stock in this regard. And the fact of the matter is, you cannot get addicted to something you've never tried. You just can't. You are totally safe from it. I am 100% free of any potential for abuse because I just never tried drugs. I mean, I tried weed a couple times. I did salvia once. I've drank my share, but drinking is no real worry for me because it just decimates me, man. It does me in. So, I don't know. I mean, I know that's a square fucking tax to take. Just say no. But, I mean, it's true. If you never even try this shit, you don't even know what you're missing. You're safe. And, I don't know, mostly because of my brother and his drug problems. I'm scared of drugs. I remember Ian was surprised. I don't know, we'd had tons of arguments about drugs. I don't know why it was so surprising, but when I finally just laid it out like that, just like, I'm scared of this shit, she just didn't understand. I was like, really? Yeah, sorry. I am. With good cause. I just walked past a guy. It was a little weird. He was like sitting behind a fence, or like behind a sign. Like when cops wait to... catch speeders. I mean, he was just sitting. He didn't give a shit about me, but totally didn't see him coming. Even in the early morn, you can still run into people, even in the rural nowheres. Sun is starting to come up. Hear that siren way off in the distance? I think it's getting closer. Here it comes. Let's see. Cop car, fire engine, or ambulance. Let's see. But yeah, sun is starting to come up a little bit. Just like that little bit of brightness in the blue of the sky. Ambulance. So, yeah, here's Pillmatic, the odd man out on this album. A little bit of a weird tune, hard for me to relate to this one.
Hearts in mommy's little pocketbook and took them. Popping when she wasn't looking. I guess it runs in the family. I'm liable to eat any pill you randomly hand me. Save the greenery. I'm looking for them labels. Reading may cause drowsiness. Be careful when operating machinery. Beautiful pharmaceuticals. Residue in my cuticle. Sniffing them with a suitable. Wishing they made them chewable. Catch me in the source with five pills next to my name. Like fuck five mics. I'm on five bike fame. If killing pain is the name of the game, then I'm your number one draft pick. Dash quick to the closest medicine cabinet. Kill the whole bottle. Never played the role model position. I'm just living. So take two of these and call me in the morning. I'ma take four and finish the 40, cause life's boring and I'm
Pillmatic. Three Xannies down, I'm pounding honey browns. I'm Pillmatic. The Oxycontin got my stomach rotten. Pillmatic. I swear to God I'm not an addict, but I'm still at it. Dagnabbit, I'm Pillmatic.
Keep the hydro unless it's cold dome behind it. Never have to roam far from home to find it. Writing fake scripts like my doctor signed it. Till I spelled his last name wrong. A song for the kids like the last album. Put them to bed, go ahead and turn the volume up. A couple meds to ease the pain of the paper cuts. The doctor says slow down, maybe later, but 40 milligrams of 40 and I'm faded. This world is crazy, so I stay medicated. Percocet, Ativan, and Klonopin. When my social lights are out, they turn them on again. I lead them till I'm born again. Oxycontin, orange juice, and gin equals projectile, wild style burner on a porcelain.
I'm good, I'm good.
Pillmatic, three Xannies down, I'm pounding honey browns. I'm Pillmatic, the Oxycontin got my stomach rotten. Pillmatic, I swear to God I'm not an addict, but I'm still at it. Dagnabbit, I'm Pillmatic.
All right, this next song, man, this is the crown jewel of this album. This is one of my favorite songs, like along with Independence Day by Elliott Smith. This is Simple Living, Gym Class Heroes. Off the top of my head, I can't even think of other songs that fit so clearly into this pantheon of just songs that just, like I was talking about at the start, the vibrating of your molecules, just feeling your fucking, like your soul link to this fucking piece of art. This song, I love this song so much. And as usual with me, I mean, it really comes down to it just being catchy is the main thing. This is, to me, just my favorite to listen to song on this album. But then when you get into the words, man, it's fucking awesome. I especially like the lines about school. Just a fucking classic song.
Thank you.
two jobs, three with music, and you don't respect me. Fuck it, I'll retire now. You work until you're 16. I was scheming on plots to make my pockets well. Simple living is a bitch, but then I do it well. Some are fortunate to make it, and some of them fail. Some locomotives push through, and some of them get derailed.
So I circle back around and I'm almost back home. Like I said, the sun is starting to come up a bit, a little more traffic hitting. And really, you can't fucking top Simple Living. Holy fuck, that song's good. And after that point, the album really does start to, there's still some good songs on there, but it starts to get a lot sort of stranger and a little more abstract. So maybe I'll finish this up some other time, or maybe I'll just leave it there. I did my rambling, my random memories. Feeling all right right now. That was a nice little walk. You graduate and you either get a job or you go to school. 12 years wasn't enough. That's more than half of my life spent trying to make the world accept me. Plus I got the papers saying that I made it through. Now I'm working two jobs, three with music, and you don't respect me. Fuck it, I'll retire now. You work until you're 62. Peace. Signing out.